Welcome to the Perfect First Layer Podcast, a bi-weekly podcast where we answer questions from you, the 3D printing community. My name is Guy from Guy Shop, and as always, is my awesome co-host, JJ. How are you doing, JJ?
I'm doing good.
All right, great. And we do depend on your questions for this podcast, so if you have one for us, please go to perfectfirstlayer.com, go to the submit page, and send it. And we also have a Patreon, and we have one level right now. We're simply asking for a small donation to help keep this podcast going. So please go to patreon.com/perfectfirstlayer. So what do you got going on in the lab right now, JJ?
Yeah, it's still doing more printing. Just put up some more filament storage just today. Printing a lot of big things on the giant Orange Storm Giga.
You still haven't printed on toilet yet.
I know. I still got to get to that.
I'm telling you, that is like the nirvana of 3D printing.
That would be a good one. I've been thinking about, I need to print something with all the little practice spools that every printer we receive comes with a little 250 grams here and 100 grams there. So I want to splice it together and make some Frankenstein's monster of a print. So
yeah, that could be do you have a lot of spools of filament that have like, you know, a couple hundred feet on it?
Yeah. And so it'd be good to clear those out and to try printing something with all of it.
I usually just throw them out.
Yeah. There's a certain point where I do throw it out.
Yeah. I can't print anything with this and I don't want to even try. So
yeah, you
know, the dollar or two.
If it won't make a benchy, I won't keep it, but it's enough that it'll make a fair amount of small prints still.
So what's the biggest thing you've printed so far on the Orange Storm Giga by Elegoo?
The tallest was the first vase that I printed.
Yeah, I remember that.
And so that's a full meter tall. then the next big one I'm planning on printing is the retractable Lego lightsaber by 3D Print World.
Okay.
I'm going to print it a full meter tall.
And how long does it like expand?
Yeah, yeah. It'll be the expanding sections. And so
how long will that expand?
There's five sections. Each one's a meter.
15 feet.
There's going to be there's a little bit of overlap between the sections where they kind of link together.
So let's say, you know, conservatively
10 to 15 feet.
10 to 15 feet.
It'll be huge.
You're going to poke your eye out.
Yeah. The other use is if you take the blade sections out, it could work as a trash can. I was like, I kind of need a trash can. What if I made a Lego lightsaber size?
That's like a thing I do with the printers now. When I first got them, is I tend to print like big vase mode garbage cans.
Yeah.
But you throw stuff in them a couple times, you pick them up, they got weight in them, they just go.
Yeah, a little crack on it.
So I threw out a bunch of those. I actually printed on my Voron 350, I printed an actual milk crate.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
It took a lot of filament. It took a long time. I just wanted to see if I could, you know, I just put it together. I just got tuned. I'm like, I just want to see how long this thing will go without a problem.
Yeah.
It did really, really well.
How long of a print about was that?
I honestly don't remember. It was overnight. It was probably 8 to 12 hours.
Yeah. Because all those retractions and moving between the lattices can really take a long time.
So that's what I mean. The prints like that, I usually just turn the printer on and walk away from
set
it.
Set and forget for sure.
And that is the advantage of having the printers in the garage.
Yeah.
The ones that make noise. Mm-hmm. I've been printing a lot lately on the K1C.
Yes. Yeah.
I am really happy with that printer.
It's really good. I feel like they fixed a lot of the little things with the K1.
The K1, I still have mine.
Me too.
And the thing I liked about it most, and I've talked about this before, was the dimensional accuracy of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the K1C it's spot on.
Yeah.
You print stuff out, you put it together, it just fits. It's very refreshing.
Yeah. That's for sure.
But so what else have you been printing?
Bunch of little prints. The other interesting printer I'll be getting in is a Lulzbot finally got back to me, and they're going to send over a Workhorse Plus printer.
How big is the build volume on that?
280 by 280 by 285 tall. Okay. So not huge, but
Core XY?
Decently large. No, it's a Bedslinger. I think really? All of their printers are Bedslingers.
They don't have any Core XY machines?
No.
Really?
Which is kind of interesting.
How much does that retail for?
That is a $3,000 printer.
Oh my lord. It's a $3,000 Bedslinger?
It's a $3,000 Bedslinger.
Oh my
god. The hot end on it alone you could buy for $745.
You know, I've got a couple printers that I'm like really super happy with the print quality.
Yeah.
And they were, you know, $500 printers.
Yeah.
I don't understand $3,000 for I don't know how much better it could be.
Yeah.
I guess it's, is what I'm saying.
It's mostly for large printing because it uses 2.85 millimeter filament on it.
Oh, okay.
So it's got this heavy duty slice engineering hot end on there that can like really melt some plastic.
How big is the nozzle on it?
So it's the same slice. Slice engineering, the Gamma Master.
Okay.
I think they said a 1.6 and a 2.4 that they'd send over. The like flow rate on this is like 50 millimeter cubic millimeters per second.
Wow.
So
what, have you heard anything about those new, FL Sun printers, the T1 and something else? It looks like
the Delta printers. Yeah.
Yeah. They're saying it's like 1,000 millimeters a second print speed and 100 max flow rate.
It'll be interesting. I recently emailed them about getting one of those because I've never actually used a Delta printer before.
Neither have I. And they're so big.
Yeah, they're very tall.
Very big, very big. I really don't know where the heck I'd put it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like that orange storm gig. Well. It's like, there's no way. If they said, well, we'll give you $5,000 and here, take it. I'm like, okay, do I have to do anything with it? Or can I just take it and turn around and get rid of it? It's too big. It's just too big. It's just too big.
It needs its dedicated space for it.
Yeah. It's like my Voron, which just has a 350 cubed or 350, and it's like 320 on the Z. Anyways, that thing takes up a huge amount of room.
Yeah.
It's like 500 millimeters in all directions. It's really big.
It takes a lot of dedicated space for something like that.
Actually, I have that printer here in my office with me.
Yeah.
Because it
takes.
It's the quietest printer I have.
Oh. You've got to pick which fans you put on there. So you put some quality fans.
I put some good fans on there. And I mostly print ABS. And I've got, you know, Nevermore in there and an exhaust fan with the charcoal in it and HEPA filter. And I don't smell anything. And But I mostly run it when I'm not in the office.
Mm-hmm.
Just like.
I feel like that's one thing. Printer manufacturers need to understand, like, charge us $20 more and give us some good quality fans that turn off at the right time.
Yeah, I mean, you turn on these machines and the fans just start whirring and you're not even doing anything.
Yeah.
You just turned it on. Why do I have to hear it fan? there's no point to it. I've taken all, it's mostly the power supplies.
Yeah.
So I've taken those fans out and put like Noctuas in them.
A nice quiet one. Yeah.
Yep. Most of those fans are 12 volt too, which is nice.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
And the power supplies. Don't know why, but they are.
Huh.
I may be mistaken. It's been a while. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I may have dreamt it.
Bamboo. That's one thing. Bamboo Labs is one of the only companies that I know of is consistently knows how to do that of properly turning the fans off when they're not being used. Like you turn the printer on and you can't hear it turn on. It's like
my the Chitty does that.
Oh, does the Chitty that way?
Yeah. well, the whatever, the X plus three that I have.
Mm, yeah.
It just automatically goes off. The screen goes off. It just,
yeah,
you don't hear it.
And then you don't know it's even on. That's the only printer that I forget and leave on overnight are the bamboo printers.
Yeah, I never turn my bamboo printer off.
Yeah, because I forget. It's so silent.
Yeah, I tell you, you know, I still like my bamboo printer. I don't think it's like an evil thing in my, you know, sent from an evil corporation. But it does a good job. Mm-hmm. There are sometimes I've printed stuff out and it's like, this is not so, it doesn't do very good on overhangs, it seems.
Mm.
I have some issues with it. But it could just be really dirty. I've got like three or 4,000 hours on it, and I've never cleaned anything. It's got the original nozzle. Maybe it's time for a new nozzle. That could be my problem.
Yeah.
We've got a couple of them.
Nice.
So you want to get into the questions?
Yeah, let's dive into it.
We're just chit-chatting here, which is kind of nice too. As long as we're talking about 3D printing anyways. So this first question comes from us from Tobias Rayner. And he says, are the frozen machines any good or are they just bamboo lab replicas? I don't know. I've never owned one.
Yeah. Have you, JJ? I've never seen a are anyone reviewing those yet? I don't think I've seen a.
I know they have an FDM printer coming out.
Yes. Yeah. Because I think that's their first FDM printer that they've released. Other than that, it's just been resin printers.
It seems like they've, for a long time, they've been, I don't know, I don't want to step off and say highly regarded, but one of the good guys of the resin printing world.
Mm. Yeah.
Yes, no, maybe.
I think so. But I don't know the resin side of things as well.
No, neither do I. Okay, here's their new one. It's the Arco FDM 3D printer. It's available now for pre-order. It's 3,000 millimeters a second acceleration. It's got to be more than that. It's going to be 30. Hold on a second.
30,000.
Yeah, probably should have researched this before we started.
That would make, I feel like spec sheets. I never even look at spec sheets.
Yeah, it doesn't mean anything.
Because these are just made up numbers they're putting out there.
Yeah, I usually just look at the build volume.
Mm-hmm. And it's 300 millimeters cubed.
Yep.
So pretty good size. That's a benefit over the bamboo printers.
Yeah, they've got to figure it out and, you know, bamboo and get larger printers than 256.
Yeah, I feel like that would sell so well. A large version of the P1P.
Yeah. So I'm looking at it. This looks like a decent printer. Mm-hmm. I have no idea how much it is.
But yeah, every new printer gets this hype around it.
Yeah. It's salty. It's $850 on pre-order. That's up as this podcast date.
And it's not enclosed.
And it's not enclosed?
They you could buy an extra enclosure for $170 to buy the panels for it.
So it's $1,000.
So yeah, $1,000 to get it enclosed. And then an extra $300 if you want the 4-spool filament changer.
Oh my.
And I feel like that'll be, all these companies are now coming out with their multi-filament machines. Creality's K2 was just announced.
Yeah, but I think they said on that, they announced it on a live stream.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they said that it will also work on the K1 series.
Ooh,
I may be mistaken, but I remember reading that somewhere.
Yeah, it seems like something they could do. Just like if it can talk to the control board and then you add an extra little piece on the... Similar with the bamboo printers, you have to add an extra little module to the back.
Yeah.
So it can do the filament swapping.
Yeah, but I wonder where it plugs into.
Yeah.
That's not the thing.
Could be the USB on the front, maybe.
It's kind of janky.
Yeah, but janky and works is still works.
Yeah, yeah. I've got a couple of janky things going on out there. So yeah, it's nothing new. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that's going to be exciting to see other manufacturers other than Bamboo mm-hmm. have that market segment to themselves.
Yeah.
Of the I don't know if you call them filament management systems. Let's call them FMSs from now on.
FMSs, multicolor printing systems.
Filament management system.
But usability of them will be really interesting. Because I feel like that's what I'm the one thing I complain about a lot on printers when they come out, and it's just difficult to change a spool on the back. Like, you got to reach around the back and the Bowden tube and the, if it's hard to change a spool of filament, then I don't enjoy using this printer.
Yeah. Most of the time I just say, well, it's on the back, but I've printed out, I've got probably a half a dozen laying around the little roller carts you set next to it. And the spool just goes off of that.
Yeah.
And those have worked actually really well for me. I haven't had any issues. I've got one that's like a big thing with the base, and it holds it up in the air a little bit, and I can put some weight on the base. So if I have a spool that doesn't have a lot of filament on it, you always have to worry about them falling over. It won't do that.
And I don't even mind it being mounted on the back. I've got long arms, so I can reach around the back. But like the K1, it's really easy to change filament. You press a single button, it does the whole unload. But other ones like the King Rune, the box printer from King Rune.
I don't know if the number is.
From where it was mounted on the back, it just had two extremely tight bends to get to the filament runout sensor and then into a different Bowden tube. And so you're just reaching around the back, fiddling with getting the filament to places it doesn't want to go. And yeah, it was just like a hard thing to do.
The Chitty was like that. The problem with that thing is it's really big and really, really heavy.
Yeah.
And if you move it, the feet fall off.
Yeah.
I was thinking the last time I moved mine, I was going to epoxy the feet on.
Yeah. Permanently weld these together.
Yeah. It's so annoying. So I actually took their dry box and I threw some filament in there. And I just set it right next to the printer. Mm-hmm. And then I have a little tube that I actually screwed down to the wood next to it with a Bowden tube in it. So it doesn't pull the thing over.
You can't pull it out. Yeah.
Yeah. It works. It works really well.
Yeah.
So. But it's going to be exciting when those things come out. Mm-hmm. So we got another question here. I don't know if it's really a question. Well, maybe it is. We'll talk about it anyways. So this comes from Peter. Had it way up there. Sorry, Peter. He says he's debating between building a dual hybrid Core XY motion system for IDEX or a basic Cartesian cube setup. I know everyone is obsessed with Core XY these days for speed and quality, but are there any actual benefits to that over a cube Cartesian system like the Ender 5 Plus? From what I can tell, all the benefits come from limiting bed movement to the Z-axis and a print head that is potentially lighter due to not carrying the X-axis motor. I'm using high-temp motors, so in theory, they don't need to be moved outside the chamber, and with IDEX, the X gantry will never be that light. Am I missing something, or do these two printer styles essentially share the same benefits? I'm gonna let you go first.
Yeah, deciding between the two, IDEX does change things to this question. But in general, I would go Core. If I was building my own printer, I would go Core XY. The motors are stationary, rigid mounted, and I think that's the biggest benefit you can get there, of less weight moving around on the carriages.
Yeah.
Because if you have a lot of extra weight, depending on how big you want your printer to be.
And how fast
you want to move it.
Yeah.
And with IDEX, the Core XY solutions for IDEX can get a bit more complicated because you have twice as much cabling running around. But I would go Core XY. I think it's both really cool and has this benefit of being rigid mounted. Both motors are always working together, so you have a bit more power in moving the hot end around.
So you're saying you're a vote for Core XY.
Yeah, if I was building a box printer, I would go ahead and do a Core XY. If you want Cartesian, you can make a bed slinger a lot easier.
Yeah, but he's talking about a Cartesian motion system.
Yeah,
on a cube printer, so like the Ender 5.
Yes, like the Ender 5. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's the thing is, you have some of these Core XY printers, you know, like the Voron and Soval just came out with one too, where a couple of those printers, the bed is completely stationary. It never moves. It doesn't go up. It doesn't go down. It doesn't go back. It doesn't go forward. It just sits there. So I think that's a big benefit, you know, but not all Core XY machines have a flying gantry like that.
Mm-hmm.
So like we were talking before about the Creality K1s and all that other nonsense, those actually have a bed that moves up and down along with the head moving, you know, X and Y. So I don't know. I had an Ender 5 and an Ender 5 S1, I think is what it was.
Yeah.
And that Ender 5, I mean, I just had, you know, wheels on it, and I was regularly doing 150, 175 millimeters per second on it. I mean, the prints were, it was actually pretty darn quick. You know, I've got printers now that are a lot faster, but they're also really, really noisy and very obnoxious. Well, that might be a difference there too. So if you're looking for quiet, the Cartesian motion system is probably quieter.
The speed there is really where that the noise is coming from running it so much faster. Because, the Ender 5 S1, I thought, had really bad ghosting issues in there, probably because it's so heavy moving those rods around in there.
Were you running Clipper, and did you do...
Yeah, came with input shaper and stuff, but still I feel like it was advertised, even at that time, it was advertised as a higher speed.
Yeah.
And if you tried to print it at the time higher, which is laughable now, what the speed we were trying to run those printers at. And it's like, no, compared to a Core XY printer nowadays, they're so much faster
than
what the Ender 5 S1 was running at.
I got a Ender 3 V3, just a V3.
Yes.
In a while ago, and I finally did a video on it last weekend.
Yes.
And you know, I go back to the Ender 3 V2 I had. it's totally a different animal. You know, forget about the niceties and everything else. It just prints better. It's faster.
Mm-hmm.
It's just so much better.
Yeah, it's so wild how better. It's still a bed slinger, but it's so much faster, better quality, easier to use.
I still want to know what benefits a $3,000 bed slinger will give you. But as far as the IDEX, I don't know much about IDEX. I've never had one.
Yeah.
You've had one, haven't you?
I have had one.
And that was a...
We do M40 or X40.
I just like saying we do.
It's funny. It was X40.
What was the inherent problems that you had with that machine?
The software they had on it.
It was just a software issue?
Just bad software. Or you'd calibrate it and then you'd leave it for the weekend and come back and you'd be like, okay, well, I had tuned this in perfectly. Let's just run a print on it. And the two different heads would just be misaligned again. And it was like, you just sat here for a weekend. Why are you misaligned again? Like, I got to re-spend 30 minutes tuning you in.
So
I think they're really cool machines.
Was it good just using one of the two heads to do a print?
Yes. Yeah. You could print with one head fine or the other, or being able to do the dual printing, which
same
was really
at the
cool.
same time.
Yeah. Where yeah. They kind of have to mirror each other because they can't independently move around. So you can do a mirrored print of each other.
Yeah. I think they can do like a clone or a mirrored.
Yes. Yeah. Clone or mirror options.
Yeah.
Which is really cool. And I think IDEX opens up a lot of options for multicolor or multi-material printing, where you're printing at two different temperatures or mm-hmm. even two different size nozzles on each other. If you had one of the print heads with a thick nozzle to do really thick infill or something, that could be a really cool option.
Idea.
Or printing one at PETG and your print is in PLA. Like you're doing your supports in one material or the other. Main print in a different material.
Yeah. Now they actually make a Core XY multi-head printer.
Yeah.
The Prusa XL.
Oh yeah, that one.
Yeah, it's Core XY and you got up to five heads on it. But yeah. I think it with five heads, it's almost as much as that Lulzbot.
Yeah. Yeah.
Shouldn't but make fun of them.
Also
yeah, swaps, I'm sorry. I'm
swaps
I'm sorry.
Out print head, which is pretty cool. Like it's a whole different thing of trying to add a different.
Yeah. You know, when those things first came out, I think a lot of, I know there are some people you could tell they were kind of disappointed. Mm-hmm. They had to do so much work to it. But I think I heard they had got all the kinks out of the system now.
Mm,
there's a lot of firmware and software issues. But that happens to everybody, it seems.
Oh, And such a complex machine like that, it's going to take complex software, and that's going to take a bit.
They were taking pre-orders on it like 16 years ago.
Yeah, that one was in development for a long time.
Yeah, I think people waited a couple of years for it, didn't they?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a long time.
That's a long time to wait, yeah.
Unbelievable. So, all right. Well, I hope that that helps, Peter. I haven't had an IDEX printer before, so.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, generally going back to his question of Cartesian versus Core XY, I would go Core XY because there are a few benefits to it, but also they both work. I think a lot of companies make these Core XY printers that they shouldn't be making Core XY, just because it's kind of a complex system and you have to build it correctly to make it work. Like a cheap $200 Core XY printer, it's not going to be a good Core XY printer.
You never know. Might be a diamond in the rough.
It could be.
Could be.
But I've also had some bad ones.
I've been lucky so far. I've only got a couple printers that were really, like, truly awful.
Yeah.
So that was that Cetus 2.
Oh, yeah.
That was a single head printer, but it was dual filament.
Yeah, that was a complex system they tried
to
build.
It's actually a very well built machine. It's just the software. Like you said on the we do, it was horrible.
Yeah.
Just awful. The slicing software was the most complicated thing. I mean,
And a lot of times that's the difference in a good printer and a bad printer is. How is the slicing software and how well did you configure the firmware on this to do it correctly? That's the Orange Storm Giga already. I found issues in the firmware. I was like, hey.
I've watched a couple people's reviews on them and they've been, hey, this is a pre-production unit. This is a pre-production unit. That's all I keep hearing. Like, okay. I'm good with that. I understand.
Yeah.
So, but some people might not.
Mm-hmm. And it's different when they give reviewers a pre-production unit versus if they're actually shipping pre-production units to paying customers. I would be mad if I paid $1,200 and the firmware isn't working well.
But you said it right there. That thing's only like going to be like $1,200.
That was like early bird price. It was $1,200 and then I think $1,500.
Okay.
For the other early bird price.
You look at that printer and let's compare it to, let's say, a Bamboo X1.
Yeah.
with an AMS, it's $1,500.
Yeah.
So if you took that, you know, talking about IDEX, they were saying how many heads could you put on that?
You could put four on it.
Four on it.
Yeah.
Well, there you go. That's multi-color printer.
Multi-material right there. Yeah. Four different spools you could load on. Yeah. I hadn't thought about that.
Yeah. I think it would decrease the build volume on the X and Y.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because the heads are in the way.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it's also it's a very different machine. Like, you need a dedicated room for this thing. It's
I can't even imagine.
Absurd.
I can't even imagine. He's also got another question here. And should I trust that all this can be done safely, follow directions, post online, maybe just have an electrician friend check my work? Is the reality that wiring any moving parts will eventually fail, and therefore should I pursue a custom 48 volt or 24 volt heat bed made in the 800 plus watt range? Now, if I was going to do core XY, I would do something with a, I don't know if you can do a flying gantry with IDEX, can you?
I don't know. I'd need to look at the other, because I've seen some complex core XY IDEX setups. Yeah. That people have done with it. And so you probably could do a flying gantry with that.
Yeah. And I really don't have a problem with, you know, beds that run 120 here in the US.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Unless it's a bamboo. But sorry, I had to get that in there.
Had to get that one in there.
I had to get that in there. I really don't care either way. But I guess what I'm saying is none of that, that I'm actually happy if something has 110 volt. Bed, because I know it's going to heat up really super fast, especially on the big printers.
I think if it's well built, it's fine. And if you build it yourself, just double check everything and also keep up on it, like to kind of take a look once a year. If I only had one printer, back when I had only one printer, I would, you know, look at the wires or make sure things are correctly lubricated and cleaned.
But as far as like the 120 voltage going to the heat bed, it just got to check your wires if it's moving. I don't think I'd put it on a bed slinger, but definitely a bed that goes up and down on the Z. I don't think I have a problem. You know, does that orange star, you know, we keep talking about the orange star Giga. Does that have 120 volts for the beds?
I don't think so.
Because you said it had like five power supplies
in there. There's one power supply for each bed, and then there's an extra power supply to do the electronics of it.
Maybe they didn't do it because it
pulls close to 15 amps.
Yeah, that's what I mean. If you did it 110, it would be even worse. Or 120, it would probably, well, maybe it probably, you know what they should make, and I have an option for is 220 here in the US.
Yeah, or it does. If I had a 220 plug in that room, then I would have plugged it to 220.
I would have found a way.
Yeah.
I've got so much dedicated, all that power in my shop. My box is full. Oh, actually, I'm looking at your our listeners at home can't see this. I see the Ender 3 V3.
The V3 over is your back shoulder here there. Still. Yeah.
Nice. What do you think so far?
It's good. I really enjoy it. The one issue I have is the thick cable that comes off of the X axis. Yep. Until I cable managed it correctly, I had an issue of it trying to doing the bed leveling, but that cable was so heavy.
It would loop around the other.
Yeah, it was kind of catching on that. So it thought it was leveling the bed an inch off of the bed. And so I had to. So the first print was spaghetti, and then I had to fix it from there.
I used a tie wrap and tied up one of the two. I had a problem with the wires like looping around each other. So I just had to keep one out of the way, and I just used a tie wrap.
And it kind of runs into the spool holder, being the spool holder on the side.
Two things I cannot understand about any of these manufacturers is fan noise, just from just being on, we talked about before, but the stupid-ass spool holders.
Yeah.
Like, why? It's like an afterthought.
Yeah,
I
like the top-mounted ones, personally. Like on the CR10 SE, it's got two spool mounts on top, so it's like really easy to switch between your filaments. I don't know, just easy to use on that one. And then this one is like, oh, it's over on the side, and
yeah, you know, I always complain about the plug being on the side of machines. It was like a slim trim unit. Mm-hmm. And I got this plug sticking out the side, and it's like, oh my gosh,
I can't
move it over here. So at least they put the plug in the back, which which I like. But that spool holder is horrible.
Yeah, yeah. But other than that, good printer, prints well.
Yeah, I've been pretty happy with the prints.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So. We're both on board for the 800 watt range, 48 volt. You go 48 volt? I don't know what the
some people use 48 volts for instead of 24 volt system. Use 48.
Yeah,
that's which is good because you can't shock yourself on 48 volts. It's somewhere around 50 to 60 volts where dry skin is where you can get shocked on it. So like 24 volts, you can touch and you won't hurt yourself. 48 volts, you're still pretty good. You could touch that voltage and it wouldn't shock you.
Yeah.
But with AC beds, if I was building a big Voron, I would be tempted to use an AC bed, just to make sure your system is grounded properly and you put a thermal fuse on the bottom of your bed. And then, I don't know. Those are two big precautions. And double check your wiring.
Yeah.
I think it becomes pretty safe.
Most of those electrical fires are typically caused by shorts in the wire.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the wire's arcing and it flames up. And yeah. Well, you could probably explain that better than I could. Because you're like some kind of electrical engineer or
electrical
something.
Engineer or something like that.
Something like that. So this next question comes from James. James, I think this is one of your last questions. We read a question from James almost every week. He sent us a very long email with a bunch of questions. So that's a cue, James, if you're out there listening, you need to send another email with a bunch of really good questions. Thank you so much. Everybody needs to do that. So anyways, he said he was looking forward to hearing about my experience putting together my last Voron. If you guys could build your ultimate Voron, what would it be and what would be your application for it? Well, I built the application for it. I got the biggest one just because I didn't have a large format printer. I thought, you know, there are times when I'm not printing big things, but I'm printing a lot of things.
Mm-hmm.
And being able to you know, hit a button and fill bed full of copies on the slicer, and it just does it, is so very nice. So, I enjoyed my experience putting together both my Vorons. Mm-hmm. I had a lot of fun with the 2.4 because it's big and complex.
Yeah. It seems like the whole flying gantry side of it, there's a lot of complexities to all the motors. And
You know what it really boils down to? It's like anything you build. Now, I do a lot of, as I've talked about before, I do a lot of woodworking stuff too. And it's all detail. Mm-hmm. It's all detail. It's the little details that, you know, people see. So when you're building something like that, I pay really close attention to everything I'm doing. If it's off, I don't force anything. If I got to force something, there's something wrong. So I see people, you know, hitting stuff with hammers. It's like, no, why are you doing that? Just if the part doesn't work, reprint it out.
Mm-hmm.
Because sometimes they bend a little bit, you know. Yeah. So
or the slightest warping on your build plate when you printed that one part,
yeah,
can make it not fit. Yeah,
but with those Corax Y motion systems, there's so many pulleys. Now there's only two belts, but there's a lot of pulleys, and it's got to go in and out of a lot of different stuff to move all those things around. And if it's not put together properly and put together square, mm-hmm. you're gonna have a bad day.
Yeah. Was there one section of it that was your favorite with all the little details?
Yeah, and it's a weird one. It was putting together the frame.
Mm. Yeah.
Because I tend to work, and I don't work in the metric system. I use standard most of the time. But I try to get the frame down to, you know, a couple thousandths of an inch on square.
What did you use as like
really
your
tight. What's flat, that?
What did you use as like a flat surface to build it on?
I have if you've ever watched any of my videos.
Yeah.
You know that surface I put all the printers on? Light brown thing? That's an assembly table. That's a torsion box.
Ah.
I've got 5/1000ths of an inch flatness across its surface.
Wow.
For woodworking, it's important. You have to have a flat mm-hmm. surface, especially when you're dealing with like doors and stuff. Being able to put that on something flat so your door dries flat from the glue.
Yeah.
It's very important. So anyways, that's what I used and it was fine.
Yeah.
But I was using, you know, like Starrett equipment mostly to get all the measurements and get everything just really dialed in. I like the detail of it.
Mm-hmm.
I got out some brass shims and I put them in there, and it's it's dead nut square.
Wow,
really square. So, yeah. What about you? You built that Voron Zero from
it was
parts.
A piece of glass I used. I think it was a large build plate from another printer.
Gonna say, what was the one thing you enjoyed most about building your Voron Zero?
So it's a weird one. Also a weird one.
Yeah.
I think it was the wiring. It was very frustrating to do all the crimping and cutting of wires. And the like checking and double checking all your pins going into the little plugs correctly.
Yeah.
And probably took me a full day of
and that machine doesn't have many wires.
Yeah. Yeah. a 2.4 would be a lot of wires.
I know how to crimp wires and do all the different, you know, connectors, but I absolutely hate to do it.
Yeah.
I usually cut one thing off of something else and solder it together real quick and put some shrink wrap on it.
It's one of those where if you have the correct crimps and the correct crimping tool, you know, you can kind of get into the rhythm of it, and it's very detail oriented.
I still don't want to get into the rhythm.
Yeah.
Of it. It's just frustrating. I get frustrated. So.
Yeah. I feel like I get frustrated with leveling things. I think I'm taking my time. I think I'm being perfectly square. And then you flip it over and it wobbles on the other square or something.
Yep.
It's just like,
what? And that's the thing with you dealing with a cube like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you've got a bunch of different things you have to check for it to be a cube.
Uh-huh.
And if it's off, I think one of the toughest things, I don't know if I say tough, but the thing where it becomes really evident whether or not you've got your printer square is when you're putting the gantry together. Mm. And, you know, even on the Zero, you have to push it all the way to the back. And if it stops and there's no gap on either side between the frame and the gantry, you know you're okay.
Yeah.
That's a nice feeling. And you put this thing together and the very first time you do it and it's like next to perfect.
Oh, like, yeah.
Yeah. And you can move it with your pinky. I like that stuff. I like the mechanical part, but I do like the electronics. I love.
Yeah.
It does not bother me spending an entire afternoon tracing down a gremlin in the firmware somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
It's just not exactly what I want. I don't mind doing that at all.
Setting up the custom firmware and creating my own custom macros. That was another really fun part.
I don't go that far. I just copy and paste from other people. But every time you copy and paste something into your config file, it seems to cause something else not to work correctly.
Or at least it's copying. I want this macro to do this. So I'll copy half of this guy's who did this, and half of this other person who did this, and I'll, you know, Frankenstein it together and stuff like that.
Yeah. And mine never works. That's why it takes me forever to do. But I've commented this on before, the wiring on your Voron is just tremendous. It's got that
big look wiring that
you see like on high-end PCs.
Yeah, it's a bunch of PC components on PC cabling components put together there.
That's what it looks like.
And yeah, it looks great.
Do you know how many hours you have on that machine?
Print hours or build hours?
Print.
Oh, I don't know.
You haven't looked in Clipper?
Yeah, I haven't looked in Clipper in a while.
You should.
I should. I'll see if I can pull it up real quick.
Oh, it's on? Okay. It's got to be.
It's within arm reach from this desk, so. It prints a lot of short things, which is kind of weird.
But you've printed a lot of short things.
Yes, yeah.
It adds up. What's your guess? Is it over 1,000?
How many years now? 3? I'd say I'm going to put out 1,500 hours.
1,500? All right.
Maybe 2,000.
And how much stuff have you replaced on it?
Nothing.
Because it's worn out?
Nothing.
Nothing? Still the same nozzle? No.
Oh, nozzle has changed out. Yeah. The extruder I changed within the first 6 months, I changed a bunch of times. But then once I put the Orbiter V2 on there, I was locked in. Okay, 500 hours on it. So
that's
I was
it? Wait.
Yeah.
That's it?
I use a lot of printers. So I feel like it's not my like workhorse
go-to
print. It's my like experimental printer of like, let's try something weird.
Every time I do look at one of your shorts, which I do look at them, it always seems to be that printer.
Yeah. All my popular shorts, especially, are that one. All my other shorts that aren't going to do very good, it's when I use the Bamboo, the Creality, the Elegoo.
Well, so you shouldn't use any of that stuff anymore.
I know. I just need to stick with this one.
Yeah. Yeah. That makes sense to me anyways.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's definitely the best looking printer I have. So. Yeah.
What was the thing that drove you the most insane? What drove you insane when you were putting yours together?
The extruder on it.
Extruder?
Because the mini switch wire or mini afterburner, that's what they call the hot end. Especially because I printed all the parts on not a great ABS printer. So the tolerances weren't great. And it needs to be great tolerances, so things aren't rubbing. The filament can like smoothly pass straight through it. So just like it not printing well, and then trying to reprint the extruder and then reassemble it with these new parts that it had printed. Just so many times rebuilding that thing, and it still never the filament never slid through there well.
Yeah.
And so then when I put the Orbiter on there, it's been perfect ever since.
See, I tried putting I think they call it the Dragon Head, the Dragon Burner that uses the LDO, and I have one of the LDO extruders.
Yeah.
And I just couldn't get the wiring down. Not that I couldn't get it to work, but I couldn't get the wires packed up enough inside
up in
the thing where it wasn't interfering with the travel on the X axis.
Yeah.
It was taking, you know, it's a 120 millimeter bed to begin with, but when you have to put your print area down to like 105 because it's these wires are coming out of the side. I took it off.
Mm-hmm.
And I went back. Actually, I have just the mini stealth burner.
Just that's the stock it. One. Yeah.
Just the stock one. I actually have a Voron Revo hot end on it. So it's just a Revo hot end.
Yeah.
And it's fine.
Yeah. I've got just a regular just Dragon fine. Hot end on it. But that was another, yeah, the wiring is so difficult for these fans. And I broke the fan on the front is really delicate. Yep. It's such a narrow fan. And I think I broke two of those by just it spinning. And then I'm trying to do something and a piece of filament gets stuck in it and it just snaps off a fan blade because those fan blades are tiny and very delicate.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you so try to move the wires around and it pulls out of the fan. It's like, oh, son of
a... Yeah. It's like, it pulls out like at the fan. So I can't resolder this back together at all.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the thing I always have a problem with is when there's too many damn wires.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a big mess.
Yeah.
It's just a big mess.
And they need to fit all in and behind something. And
yeah. And even with CAN bus, you're still in that head and they try to make them small and light. So when they tell you to cut the wires to 10 millimeters, cut it to 10 millimeters. You don't need any extra because, you know, just you take the seven, eight wires that are going from the CAN bus to the rest of the stuff and it adds up pretty quick.
Yeah. You just don't have extra room for.
There's no extra room inside there.
Yeah. It is well designed, but hard to build.
Yeah. But fun to build.
Yes.
If you like that sort of thing, I can't recommend building a Voron enough.
Yeah, it is a very fun project.
If you like, that's why I'm surprised you've only built one.
Yeah, I recently got, what was that? Fizetech recently reached out to see if I wanted a kit to build another Voron V0. And maybe I should take them up on it.
Go get the big one.
I could also ask them, or they actually asked if I wanted the 0.2. The big printer would be fun.
Say I want the big printer. They'll give it to you.
But I like the little one. It's cute on my desk.
Yeah, I know. But the big one is fun to build.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, that's the thing.
That's the part of it.
All right. Well, I think that's going to do it for this show. Yeah. That was a lot of fun just chit chatting.
Yeah.
I hope the listeners out there liked it. And so remember, we really do need questions from you guys out there and gals. So go to perfectfirstlayer.com, go to submit page and ask us. And how do they email us directly?
You can email me directly at perfectfirstlayer@gmail.com.
All right. And where can you be found on YouTube?
And I'm on YouTube at JJ Shankles.
All right. And I can be found at Guy's Shop. All right. Thanks so much for listening. That was a lot of fun, JJ. And we'll talk to you next time.
Talk to you next time. Bye. See you.